Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Anne and Peter Haig. And I think it's not an exaggeration to report that in Ireland we spotted a rainbow, and we really struck gold in that trip by both the restaurants, the chefs we found, the people we talked to, and the gorgeous, gorgeous scenery in Western Ireland.
Yeah, and the wonderful ingredients, which they say is really responsible for it, although I suspect that some culinary skills have a little bit to do with it as well.
But it was, I mean, beautiful produce, beautiful seafood. It's all there.
And we're starting out today's program in what I guess is probably the heart of the new Western Ireland cuisine, if you can call it that, and I think you probably can, the city of Galway, G-A-L-W-A-Y. And our first interview is with J.P. McMahon, who, well, you can't say he started it all, but he certainly started something new for Galway food when 2 years ago he received a Michelin star for a restaurant that nobody outside of Galway had ever heard of. So we caught up with him again, of course. We had a beautiful dinner at his restaurant, flagship restaurant in here, and we took the opportunity to talk to him about what's been happening recently at an ear and at Cava and in Galway generally.
And I'm wondering if he's actually back from, he was representing Ireland in the Cook It Raw event in South Charleston, South Carolina, and last I heard he was dressing an alligator that they had shot. We're going to get a catch up here with J.P. McMahon. Welcome to On the Menu yet again, J.P. I want you to bring us up to date. What's happened for you, your restaurant group, Ireland, Galway, whatever? Just bring us up to date.
Hi, thanks. Thanks very much again for having me back. I suppose it's nearly a year ago since we talked. I suppose the two biggest things that have happened in the last while, first that we moved Cava. We had to do that through rent difficulties, so we moved to a slightly smaller premises, but it was a good opportunity to focus on what the restaurant meant to us and that. So we scaled down the menu, and I mean, Cava is all about, I suppose, tapas and small portions and engaging with the kind of Spanish tradition through a kind of Irish lens. So I mean, that was good for us. That's only up and running now a month, so we had really positive feedback, and we had complete control over the design project, because the last time we went into a premises that was just about finished, so we were able to kind of gut the whole premises and start from scratch. So we've a lovely open kitchen, which is like what I always wanted, to be able to see the chefs, and we're able to integrate some of the kind of Spanish traditions, like hanging hamons from the roof, and things that we weren't able to do before. So I think for me, what's always important when you're doing a project is the focus on the key elements, and that's what I think that's what we did to take Cava back to its core. And with the Nier, which is, I suppose, our flagship, Nier retained its Michelin star just there a few weeks ago, which was great. It was kind of a nerve-wracking year because a lot of the kitchen staff we changed head chef, I think it's an entirely new kitchen team, which is, I suppose, one of the pros and cons of Michelin. Be when you get it, chefs like to move on and go on to greater things, and our head chef wanted to go off and do something himself because he felt he had achieved something there, and other chefs left as well. Some went back to Spain, and so we have an entirely new kitchen team there. But again, I think the restaurant has matured over its 2 years, and keeping the star was a great coup, because as I was talking to you beforehand, it's very difficult sometimes to know what to do. I mean, keep doing what you're doing and don't change, or do you change slightly and innovate a little bit, or do you innovate a lot? And it's all about kind of like, well, what going. So we stay true to the kind of idea of Anir, which is, I suppose, looking towards the local landscape for inspiration with regard to food, like farmed food, foraged food, wild food. We got a new team in gradually. And I suppose we developed the whole idea of it, and thankfully, whatever we did, Michelin were happy with, and we kept our star.
Just by way of explanation, can you just run through briefly what your team is? It's and your other restaurant too. Is you, your brother, your wife? Could you explain that? And also, who's your new head chef?
I suppose it's myself and my wife who run the company. I'm a chef by trade. My wife is involved heavily in the design of the restaurants and also in the administration and the financial side of things. My brother, whom you met last night, is the manager of Veneer, and Alex is like great core. And I think often with Michelin, we get preoccupied with the chef, and okay, it is a massive part of Michelin. You've your Michelin starred chefs and that, but I think the floor run by my brother is an integral part of that, and the service I think is a key element. And Alex does that quite wonderfully, and I think he was able to bridge the gap between the change in chefs.
Yeah, I wanted to say that when you say flagship, it's your fine dining restaurant. It's fine in the sense that the recipes are all, food is very refined and sophisticated, but it's still comfortably casual in its ambience, and the service is very, very well trained, but it also is not overbearing or anything. Like when you say fine dining, you might think about. Anyhow, we enjoyed that.
On the fine dining thing, I think a lot of people, particularly are the international clients that come into us, always say it's the most modest Michelin star restaurant they've ever been in. And like that's, we always set out to have an understatedness about the floor. And as you said, I mean, the waiters are to speed on every element of the dish, and that's really important for us, so they can explain if the dish does have five or six different elements, they know what's going on in the dish. Because that's, I mean, I think that's key for the philosophy of the restaurant. But definitely, I think that understatedness is the way forward for fine dining, because I think you can put more resources into the food, because the labor, the chef's labor, is costing you enough anyway. But more, I suppose, trappings you put into the floor, whether it's tablecloths or whether it's expensive cutlery, expensive glasses, that's not to say the cutlery and glasses we have aren't up to scratch, but it's just that they're a bit less, but it's still a difficulty in Ireland when you talk about Veneer, and you have to put it in the fine dining category, even though it's, again, if there isn't any tablecloths. When you go in, it looks like a bistro and that, but there isn't really any, it's very hard to describe it any other way, because you still want people to understand that it's a kind of food experience. But our new head chef there, Alton Cook, is a friend of mine for about 12 years or so, and Alton spent a lot of time in London. Enda was leaving. I contacted Alton and see if he wanted to come back home. He'd been living in London with his wife and child, and yeah, he jumped at the project, and he's kind of embraced the philosophy of Veneer, and we're continuing that on. So again, the two of us work together quite closely on trying to look at not only different ways of making food, but also trying to find new producers and new interesting products to move the whole project forward.
Now, you mentioned foraging, and I happen to know that your previous head chef did a stage at NoMa, and he's very much into foraging. Is this whole concept, which is called New Nordic, is it influencing New Irish cuisine? I mean, how much of this foraging do you maintain at your restaurant?
No, yeah, we still forage a bit. I mean, I'd go out myself a small bit, but I definitely see what you call the New Nordic is definitely influencing a whole host of restaurants in Ireland, in Dublin, in Cork, and in Galway. That very kind of clean presentation with very clean flavors, but bold and wild food integrated into that. See that a lot. And that still does filter down through and near. I suppose for us, there are probably many, many different traditions to look at the moment. And I know we spoke just a moment ago about Daniel Patterson's new book that I'm looking forward to. I mean, I think there's so much new ideas and books coming out of America at the moment as well that I'm really looking forward to as well. So I think, and then you've also got Northern Spain as well, which is a hot pot for ideas. And all of them emerge. For me at the moment, there seems to be two poles. I mean, I know we spoke about Latin America, which is another base that I think is going to come into the fore 10 years or so. Like, it's going to have a massive impact on Europe. But definitely for me at the moment, particularly in Europe, the two poles are of cooking are either the New Nordic and the Northern Spanish. And both of them, for me, meet sometimes in the wild. They meet. Both of them use wild and foraged elements, quite differently. But if you think about the restaurants such as Noma or Mugaritz or the Rucker Brothers or Magnus Nielsen's Fabrikken, there's parallels that we can draw. And I think the fact that these restaurants have produced books and also with the internet, I think there's an accessibility, a greater accessibility to newer ideas. And I think that they come to us more rapidly than before.
How about a little food porn here? We had dinner at an air last night, and this is the menu that we have. I'm pushing in front of you. And I wondered if you could just sort of explain, run through some of the reasoning and the dishes and the components of the dishes. Just talk a little bit about what we ate.
Yeah, so you guys had the tasting menu, and our tasting menu is made up of five that we pair with wines. Interestingly enough, we used to have the tasting menu as an option, but when we got the star, we had to put it on as a kind of prerequisite, because everybody, or about 90% of people, associate tasting menus with Michelin star restaurants, so we had to have it on. And I don't know if you noticed that we had to reduce our a la carte. So we used to have five starters and five main course and five desserts, but we had to reduce that to three, particularly because of the size of the kitchen. And now some nights, Friday and Saturday, you'd probably do nearly all tastings. So it's a strange demographic. I find sometimes on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, you get Berlin who have a lot of a la carte, start with main course and dessert, and then Friday and Saturday everyone goes for tasting. And I don't know why that is. I'm sure there's something influencing. But the tasting menu, again, changes subtly daily or weekly with regard to the products. And as you saw before, we don't include menu descriptions on our menu. So for like the example for our salmon, the salmon dish that you start with just has confit salmon, cucumber and shrimp. So there's a certain element eater in that the customer sees the three core elements of that dish, but they don't know which way they're going to come. So the salmon is kind of very lightly confit and sous vide, between 12 and 14 minutes at quite a low temperature. So it's, for me, it has the texture of smoked salmon without the smoke. So it's a very, very clean dish, and particularly because I think we have such good salmon in Ireland. And then the shrimp that we have, our local shrimp that we dry and then turn them into a little powder. So it's almost like we turn the shrimp into a little seasoning, which again we put with the salmon, and it complements that. The cucumber, we have a little bit of cucumber, and then we have a compressed cucumber as well that we do with the backpack machine. And then there's always another element that we don't include. So if you look at the menu, there's nearly always three or four different items lined up, and usually with the confit salmon we have a smoked scallop roe mayonnaise that you add on just at the end of the dish, and I think it brings the whole dish the kind of smokiness. I mean, smoking is a very important part of the restaurant. I love smoking things, and also the roe, which is the scallop roe, which again is something that's generally discarded, not used as much, and I think it's a great way to integrate that into the dish. The second course you have was the duck hearts that we're doing our best to promote, to get people to eat, both in Anir, and we have chicken hearts on in Cava Bodega. The duck hearts are really fried quite quickly. They're served medium rare. So, I mean, for me, everyone associates heart with offal, but for me, the hearts never have that kind of punch that you'd get with offal. And for me, there's a lovely subtlety to them, and it's all, for me, sometimes they're like eating the fillet, you know, because there's such a delicacy. And we serve them with a hen's egg, lightly poached, and we just serve it with the yolk. So it's kind of like the yolk is the sauce of the dish. And last night we had some gorse liqueur. So we had gorse that we fused into some liqueur in the same way you'd make slow gin. That was something that again it's to bring the wild element, and the wild elements are always components in the dish, because I think it's important to remember that when you're running a restaurant and you're running a business and you have customers, that there's a kind of ideal and then there's a real. And the ideal sometimes is let's go and get everything in the wild and let's go and get everything forage. But then the reality is you either can't get there yourself, or there's a number of foragers we work with, particularly mushroom foragers, that they don't, sometimes the weather is bad. So you kind of have to balance those two different things. So we like to have a representation of the wild on the menu in little subtle parts, enough that it shines, but not enough that not too much that it just takes over completely. Because we also want the products that we produce in Ireland, like that the farmers produce, whether it's a lamb or whether it's beef or anything like that, we want that to shine as well. So it's all about, for me, it's about a balance between the two things. The third dish you had in your tasting was the scallops, carrot and pork belly. The scallops we always have on. I think we'd be shot if we took scallops off the menu. So it's probably one of the few things, because I'm looking at the menu now and it changes a lot subtlety, but nearly everything is different. The crab as well. It's just something that, I mean, sometimes when people look at the menu, particularly because there's no descriptions, they're quite apprehensive about coming in because we don't have, like, it's cooked X, Y, and Z and it's in a luscious, and we've no adjectives or anything like that. So, like, how you get people in is that you say, oh, the scallops, I eat scallops, you know, because we've never had steak on the menu. The closest we get to steak would be a beef cheek. And still, I ask people, as much as they like beef, sometimes they'd shy away from the cheek. And scallops is there as our little hook. And at the moment we serve them with a carrot done a few different ways as a puree, little small organic baby carrots, and sometimes as a little carrot cress from the top of the carrot that still has a lovely kind of carroty texture. Again, we cook that sous vide and it's slightly brined. So for me, pork and scallops are like a wonderful combination. I mean, I think it's quite a classical combination, but there are two things I think that we produce very, very well in Ireland. One is scallops, particularly on the West Coast, and the other is pork. And I think we've like absolutely amazing pork. The pork we get, free range pork from Roscommon. It's one of the few free range farms in commercial free range farms in the west of Ireland, and we have a very close relationship with Brendan, the farmer, and like it's integral to, if you want to get the best product, you need to know the person who's producing it. Like, you need to have a personal relationship with them, so they know, oh, like I'm killing this day and it's going to be ready X day and it's going to be this old when you get it, and then at least then you have a part to play in that, so you can. If there's a different specification that you want, then you can go and talk to, particularly with the beef and the lamb and the pork. As part of that, I suppose the fourth dish is the wild pigeon at the moment, which comes from a hunter that we work with at the moment. We get pigeon and rabbit from Eamon at the moment. Wonderful wild pigeons, like really delicate flesh and flavour. And the pigeon is one of the new dishes we have on the menu. And for me, I love game season. I love autumn because you've got like mushrooms, like pumpkins, squash, all those earthy vegetables. You've loads of nuts, walnuts, hazelnuts, and then also you have like such a variety of different birds to work with. So I really like game season. And the pigeon we cook lightly sous vide, and then we finish it off in the pan order. So again, it's served quite rare. But that's something, and it's the gooseberries and that, and the last dessert is the meadow sweet, which again is something that we get from the wild, mixed with blackberries and apples. And again, that's something that our pastry chef Nicola, who's a new pastry chef, who's working with the wild, she's to get used to using the wild a bit more often, because she comes from a more classical background of hotel pastry and that. So when you give her a brief, Nicholas, she's always quite excited about that.
Well, no wonder we enjoyed ourselves so much. It makes me want to come back regularly, though, because I know that you're going to keep changing up things and growing and developing. I also, you're about to go off to the Carolinas for Cook at Raw. This will be your first Cook at Raw experience, and maybe we can talk after that as well. Again, JP, thank you so much, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us too.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure as always, and hopefully I'll find a few new things to talk about in Charleston. It's my first time going to Carolina and to Cook and Raw, to both. So so I'm apprehensive about both. I think on the itinerary we're hunting alligators. So I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know how I feel about that. We have to sign a disclaimer if I lose a limb now, the wife won't be too happy. But I'm gonna try and come back intact anyway. I think there's optional mushroom foraging. I might go off and do that rather than look for the alligators. But we'll see what happens anyway.
And we haven't actually heard from JP, but I hope he will soon. It'll be a relief to find out that he got safely back to Galway. And now, right after the break, we'll be back with another super-duper Galway chef.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, our next chef is, of course, I'm always interested in women chefs, and also this particular woman chef happens to be a New Zealander. In fact, there's a portrait of her grandmother dead center on the restaurant wall as you walk in, she was part Maori, and you could tell the resemblance with Jess. Jess Murphy is... And we're going to be talking also later with her husband,
yeah, he's
David.
Right, he's right in the conversation.
He's in the conversation. But Jess has been, she had all the right connections and sent us in all the right directions. She's friends with everybody, and she was repeatedly described not only as a ball of fire and energy-wise, but a breath of fresh air. So we loved having dinner with her and David.
And so did the rest of the restaurant, as you'll hear, unfortunately, in the background sound. So I do apologize for the amount of back chatter that was going on. Well, it gives you an idea what a dynamic place Kai Restaurant and Bar is.
You know, sometimes you find people that you're just naturally aligned with, and that's what we did when we came to Kai Restaurant. And Jess and David Murphy, you've been such wonderful hosts, and we had such wonderful food. I don't know where to start. Jess is the chef, and David, you kind of run the part of the business. What do you do?
I'm the front office manager, I suppose you want to call it. I'm also the waiter. I'm absolutely everything else. I look after the restaurant. I look after the good food that Jess puts out, and look after the customers, and Mitchie D as well.
And you're so easy to get along with, and you're so much fun. And Jess, your philosophy matches so much up with what we love. We had just a wonderful dinner. Let's start a little bit with the fact that you're actually not Irish, you're from New Zealand.
Yes, so I grew up in a small town in New Zealand in Hawke's Bay, so eventually ended up in Galway.
You jumped through a lot there.
Sorry, I thought I had time to explain it.
I guess that our listeners would like to know what the various influences are on your style of restaurant and cuisine right now.
Okay, basically it started off a long, long time ago when I was small and in New Zealand. Basically I was raised by my grandmother. They had a sheep farm, so obviously the whole ethos started from then. She was the only woman that I ever knew that could roll a cigarette and kill a chicken at the same time. And can hang mutton up in a tree and saw it in half with a hacksaw, no problem. And she just let us be ourselves. And so that naturally just progressed into our food anyway. And so when I actually, I always wanted to cook. I always had the feeling I wanted to cook. And probably from the age of 7, that fire started inside of me, how I wanted to cook for people and just put as much energy as I can into the food for people and want to know where it comes from and want them to know how special it is and what they're eating. That's really my ethos. It's where it comes from and where it begins.
Now, that part of it might be influential from New Zealand, but your flavors are, they're, according to my standards, honest, very, very strong. I mean, not strong, but very wonderful flavors. Flavor seems to be at the top of your priorities, and you like really prime ingredients, and you've worked for a long time with certain growers to get exactly the products that you're serving now.
Well, I suppose in the west of Ireland now, I've worked for about nine solid years to get 3 farmers up to what actually I wanted them to grow, and actually really pushed and pushed and pushed with help from my friends like the wonderful JP of supporting all these people. As soon as one of us finds a small guy, we all latch onto him and we push him and push him and push him. And then we you know, at the moment, the West Coast is becoming so big and so amazing in Ireland that we don't want anyone from Dublin to come in and buy all our stuff. Like, so it's absolutely amazing. And the people in the west of Ireland are amazing. They're so bohemian. I mean, they come from everywhere. Like, we've got friends from Holland, the States, you name it. There's a New Zealand community here. There's a Mongolian community here, the Hungarians. So it's a real good mix, and everybody just throws that energy back into food. Whoever doesn't know how to make that, you know, we'll go around to somebody's house and they're from Vietnam, so they're making Vietnamese pork, and it's just all out of Irish, all out of Irish ingredients from the West Coast. So it's a massive food revolution movement. And I describe the flavors of my food. I don't know, I'm gutsy. I'm a woman. I've always had to fight in kitchens. I suppose the drive, I have drive. So to push that flavour into the food, for people to come and just have a tasty meal, that's all that's important to me at the end of the day.
Now, David, I mean, you, where do you come from, and how did you decide to connect with this very high active person that you're dealing with?
Well, I met my good wife in Australia backpacking. She's a New Zealander. Met over there. She was always chefing. Was over there just as a working holiday. I mean, I'm a tradesman by, and she met to work on my welder by trade. So I always did my trade. My wife did her job, which she loved. We always had the dream of our own restaurants. We lived in Australia together. We lived in New Zealand together. Jess came back to Ireland to give the old Michelin, working two Michelin style restaurants, to give it a go, to do the higher end food for a change. And then we moved to Galway, 9 years in Galway. But, it was the whole case of we eventually wanted to do our own thing. And yes, so this woman is highly driven, knows what she wants. And for her to have her own restaurant, her own kitchen, her own brigade, it's where it's at. And for her to do it for herself and for us, yeah, it's very good. And it's good for us, and it's good for the rest of Ireland, hopefully.
Now, you picked up with her vibe. You travel a lot, right?
Yeah, no, Steph and Jess, we met each other away from our native homes. We've lived in numerous countries. We travel whenever we can. It's always food orientated, of some description. Food and obviously good wine as well. And it's a case of always learning, but also seeing what people are doing. And just taking small snippets from everywhere, to be honest. And we're big into the slow food movement, so we like learning that kind of stuff. Like problems of food, problems of the chefs, and problems of, you know what I mean, of the restaurant, and, you know what I mean, of what we want to eat ourselves, and want, you know what I mean, what we want to, what people to eat, our style of food, and our style of restaurant.
Now, there is a fresh air, I think, descending on Irish cuisine. I'm just going to ask you, Jess, to comment on it because you're right in the heart of it. What's happening? What are the most important directions that Irish cuisine is taking now? And how influential are all these foreign things like New Nordic and American and all that?
I'll start from the beginning. So I think the whole revolution, it starts with young farmers coming in, the dads retiring, the younger guys coming in, retiring from marine biology in San Francisco and going, hey, I really ate good food in San Francisco. I'm going to have a go at growing sweet corn, or I'm going to have a go at doing some honey, or I might just try and make some beer. And so it all started off like that. And then there was a fire in the bellies. Then everybody got involved. And then that was just a circular movement of energy. And it's still going. It hasn't stopped. I mean, we have organic bakeries now in the middle of nowhere in Ireland. The cheesemakers are absolutely cutting edge, absolutely amazing. So that's, I mean, that to me is where it comes from. And for me, it all depends on what is actually growing and what's around you. I mean, okay, we have seaweeds. We have so many seaweeds. So, you know, people can go, oh, you've got a bit of a Nordic twist to that. And it's not really. People have been eating seaweed in the west of Ireland for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And we bake them in our scones with a handful of cheese.
Really?
Yeah. We just keep it simple. And for me, you know, like I always get a kick out of working with different nationalities. I love working with the Americans. I love working with the Irish. I love working with the English. You know, the proper, go from proper ginger puddings to caramel popcorn. It's so exciting, the exchange of cultures and what you can mix together and things actually working. For me, food has never had a fashion. Food will never go out of fashion. I don't know, maybe you will in the future. I don't know. You don't know what happens, but I think if you're willing to try anything and you're willing to learn off other people, then you'll never ever stand still. Your rock will keep on moving.
Now, you are really interested in cheese. I'm going to have you go through some of the things that we ate tonight to give some concept of the kind of food to expect at the restaurant.
Okay.
The kind means something, too. Tell us what that means. But anyhow, if you could, I'm going to do something backwards. Could you talk a little bit about your cheese board and then highlight some of the other dishes that you fixed for us that we just love? Oh, I love them so much.
Okay, so I'm going to start off first. Kai means food in Maori. I'm part Maori. There's a big, massive picture of my grandmother hanging up in the restaurant. So to me, that gives me provenance and it keeps me grounded. So every time I want to do dots of something on a plate, I look at her and I think, hell no, that's not going to work. So I'm going to start off with the cheese board. We specialize in raw milk Irish cheeses. So basically, we have the likes of my favorite big hitters, like Peter from Bellingham Blue, Jeffa Gills, which is Juris raw milk cheese, 1979, has made it and fought the government for a long, long time against pasteurization of actually turning our cheese into it. So for me, I always try and have Irish raw milk cheeses on my cheese board. And I have to say, I know you're based in the States, so I have to say a big shout out to my good friends that I met over in Bra and Jasper Hill Co-op and Rogue Farm Creamery and all the girls at the Cowgirl Creamery as well, yep. My food heroes in the States that I can't wait to get there. So I'm going to start through with what we had as a starter tonight. So basically we had ox tongue, which is a pickled ox tongue, which is my brine recipe that the butcher brines for me. It's a traditional kind of Kiwi recipe that we used to eat when we were cutting the hay. So on a hot summer's day, you need something salty, you need something sweet, you need, what do they call it these days, unami? In between two slices of bread with tomato, umami, between two slices of bread and some ketchup. And so, you know, you need to replenish the salt in your body. So it was a very good working men's kind of dish. And then we have the West Coast crab with Goatsbridge caviar, which is made by a lovely woman called Mags in Goatsbridge in Kilkenny area. And the West Coast crab comes from right on our doorstep of Connemara, so you can't get more local. And then we have the wild Connemara hill lamb that you see the scrawny sheep walking all over the hills of Connemara eating all the wild herbs. That's them. And oh, wow. I mean, they're absolutely amazing. And there's one man that cures it out in Ultrad, and that's absolutely great. And then the rest is local fish, freshly caught today. The free-range pork belly from Castle Mine, and the wild boar black pudding from Cork. And then we've had, then myself and David had the pumpkin gnocchi, which I make myself, that I learned how to make in Italy. Very easy and very simple.
Listen, just in case you noticed a certain level of high energy in Jess. Jess got up at 5:30 this morning, this very day, drove all the way across Ireland to Dublin to do a demonstration photo shoot of turkey for a food and wine magazine. Now, especially since Thanksgiving isn't even a recognized holiday in Ireland. I guess that's pretty remarkable. But you had a full and busy day, but I'm guessing all your days are like that because you're always working on something new. So what's over the horizon in terms of what we can expect you to be doing at Kai in the near future by the time people are getting around to having the opportunity to make reservations to come here?
Okay, so Kai is Kai. Kai will be ever-changing. It'll be ever-growing. My dream, obviously, phase two of Kai would be basically my own microbrewery, which I ferment all my own ginger beer, hopefully definitely ferment that. My grandmother's best friend was called Jess also, and Jess Passmore rode a horse until she was 80 years old. I have her handwritten recipe, which my mother got from her before she went into a home. So I have the recipe there ready to work on. Basically, this ginger beer is full of raisins and currants. It's a real lively, natural kind of product, yeah, that I just really want to get going on. And hopefully a cookbook in the future.
Thank you again. Everybody certainly listening to this is going to want to come here. And you come, listeners, for the food, the drink. They do before wine, unless we didn't go into that yet. And also for the company and the excitement of these really big personalities and very talented people. Peter wants to say one more thing.
I think I probably want to say this is a restaurant where people in Galway come and dine more than once a week. So if you want to be sure to get a seat, dinner at this time of the year is only Wednesday through.
It's Tuesday to Saturday.
Tuesday through no.
Tuesday to a Saturday.
Tuesday to Saturday.
The dinner only started. This week it only started on Wednesday.
Yes, because I was back, yeah.
Oh, okay. So
normally it's Tuesday.
Oh, no. Sorry about that. It's Tuesday through Saturday. But it's kairestaurant.com. KAIrestaurant.com. You can manage to spell that. When you arrive, be prepared. It doesn't look like a good restaurant from the outside. Trust me, folks. I mean, we saw some people debating, standing out saying, am I sure I want to go in there? The answer is, yes, you should go in there. You should demand the table right in front of the window, and see Jess and David won't sit and talk to you while you're eating, which is what we did tonight. One of our most fascinating evenings of food and wine and company. We thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We all look forward to seeing you in Galway.
I should have mentioned before we played that track that you can tell that it was a dynamic restaurant because the large amount of background noise that we picked up. We weren't even in the restaurant room. We were in a private room upstairs, but but sound carries.
And it was just delightful.
And anyway, we'll be back with yet another pair of stars in the culinary business right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Ender McAvoy and Connor Cockrum have something in common with the theme of this program, because both of them used to work for JP, and until they decided to go off and do their own thing, which they're still planning to do. But in the meantime, they're up to some interesting things, and they had some very interesting thoughts about why the Galway food scene is so creative and so dynamic. So here we have Ender and Connor.
We've really discovered somebody we didn't know about, although we should have, because we were in there where he previously worked. Ender McAvoy. Ah, I got that, McAvoy. And also his sous chef, Connor Cockrum.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyhow, who's a pastry chef. And they're embarking on a new restaurant adventure. And we're going to, first of all, I want to know, and I met you via somebody on Twitter, via somebody that you knew through Twitter. And tell us a little bit about your background. You've had some very interesting stages and experiences.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've had some interesting experiences. I staged in Noma for about 2 months, but like previous to that, I suppose what my background is, I've been working in the industry, in the catering industry, since like 1994. I stopped to get a degree in English and sociology, and then I've been working like in the UK, in Spain, in Germany, where I started my trade in Germany, and various other places as well, and obviously in Ireland and Galway. But I settled here. We've settled here in Galway with my wife and 2 kids now, and we're starting to embark on the next adventure, is opening a new restaurant. So, but in the interim now we're doing a sort of a pop-up thing or a sort of a cultural event on a mountain in an abandoned village where Connor and I are doing meals and talks on social history, and once a month or so. And we do a course meal based on all the ingredients we can find around that area, be they cultivated or wild. Or
now, one of the reasons we know about this is that we recently talked to someone who's an Irish lady who's lived in for the last 25 years, and she found you to do an event. Is there a way that if people are interested, they can find out on the internet what events you're going to be doing?
Yeah, our marketing skills are pretty rubbish, to tell you the truth. But we've marketed. What we do is we limit it to 12 people at a time, because up there they've got cottages that you can stay in, and they can only fit 12 people. And I think 12 is a good number for us, because it's only Connor and I that are cooking, and Charlie and Derval who are showing people around their area and talking about their experiences and rebuilding the place or whatever. So we limited it to 12 people, and we've just marketed it through like social media, you know. So we need to look at other avenues of marketing. But if you want to find out about us, you can look at the Knocksuin website, which is Knocksuin. In Spittle. Knocksuin means restful hill, which is what it is. It's a really magical place. Or there's a hashtag Knocksuin on Twitter, and you can kind of find out bits and pieces about it there. But yeah, it's kind of like watch this space for more information, but it's scant. It's exclusive, I suppose, what you say. Would you say so, Connor? Yeah.
Connor, tell us, you're a pastry chef. Tell us a little bit about your background.
I started cooking about 5 or 6 years ago. I was trained as a carpenter, and then I lost my job. And during a period when I wasn't working, I sort of discovered that cooking was really what I wanted to do. And I started working in several restaurants in Dublin. And then I moved to London about 2 years ago, where I was working at Pierre Garnier. Sketch, and I was working there for 2 years, and then I was doing a stage at the Ledbury when I heard Enda was opening up an ear, and I'd eaten at Sheridan's on the docks where Enda had worked before, and I thought I had always had an interest in sort of reviving Irish cuisine, or even anything about Irish cuisine, and sort of lifting it from Irish stew and these things people know about Irish food. And I thought that the meals I had at Sheridan's on the Docks completely blew my expectations of what Irish cuisine could be. And then when I heard that he was reopening up in Anir, I absolutely had to get a job there. And I sent him an email, and I finished up on my stage in the Ledbury, and then I got a boat. The next day after hearing back from Enda, I got a boat and called into sick and work, and got a boat and train and buses all the way to Galway, and then did a trial, and I think it was the worst trial I ever did. Everything I made, I had to remake. But somehow I got a job out of it. And then I suppose at the start of an era, it was a bit, there was dishes, but there was no sort of, there was like a small structure for what became the food there. And then we had some good times and some bad times working on the food and sort of just sort of getting a concept together. And then foraging was a huge element of it, but I think what I get my passion from when cooking this type of food is it's just sort of reviving tradition and sort of reinterpreting the traditions of Irish food and the how people survived or the culture here in the West, and then reinterpreting that into modern dishes and sort of bringing back how people eat in Ireland.
You both keep mentioning that. I think I'm probably ignorant about all this. Can you define what you're saying about how people used to eat in Ireland that you're bringing back?
Well, I suppose the way people used to eat in Ireland is the product, you know. The things that we have here are fantastic, and they always have been fantastic. It's a lush, green place, you know. But a lot of times, either we export the product or it's been, you know, treated badly in the hands of some people, like you know, that it gets overcooked or oversauced, or I suppose there's a lack of confidence in what we have. And what we, I suppose, try to help shine through is the simplicity of, you know, just, it doesn't need that much, you know. It's just, if it's cooked correctly and put on a plate, you've got a fantastic dish there, you know. Our dairy here, because it's so commonplace that you don't see how incredible it is until maybe you go abroad and you see, you have a comparison then, you know. Like our butter here is incredible. It's, the fat on our pigs is incredible, you know. Our beef is obviously incredible, but it's that it's so commonplace that, you know, it does, you kind of, if you see something so often, it's the incredible things so often, then it becomes less. But so we're supposed to, we're trying to see these things shine through, like, you know. And our native plants and vegetables and wild seafood and things like that are, you know, second to none, you know. So that's, I suppose, the way Irish people used to eat, was just having these things, you know, and cook simply and without huge adornments or anything like that, you know. So, and that's what we, I suppose, try to achieve again.
Now, apparently then, your restaurant that you're planning is going to be featuring what you're describing, your philosophy of new Irish cuisine. Is it or not? You're scrunching your face up. Tell me what I said wrong.
Yeah, I suppose, I always kind of wince at labels. I suppose it is new Irish cuisine, yeah. It's not that new, though. It's, I mean, we're just, like, not reinventing the wheel here, you know. It's just, it's Irish food, you know. Maybe a little bit repackaged. But it's still the same, you know, it's still the same thing. We're not, I suppose it's not inventing dishes. It's showcasing the producers, you know, showcasing what they have to offer, I suppose what they think is worthless as well. Like, you know, I mean, showcasing things like, you know, stems, seeds of things that we found that turn out to be quite tasty, you know, things that have gone to seeds, flowers, that sort of thing as well. Like, you know.
Well, I imagine your stage at NOMA influenced you a lot in this regard. Did you get into this that Rene Redzepi does with, like, live ants? I mean, are insects part of your program?
No, that was after my time, actually. We have a mutual friend, Trevor Moran. He was one of the sous chefs over in NOMA. That he was back here on a trip to Ireland, and he called into us. He was telling us about a dish that one of the snacks that they made was out of a paste of crickets. I suppose it was like a garum, you know, like a fish sauce type of paste thing within a sorrel leaf that was standing up like a tree. But it sounded really interesting. Really interesting food, like, you know, obviously pushing boundaries. There's a certain element of it. There's a shock factor. It has a focus on their restaurant. But they are pushing boundaries in a direction which is very interesting, like, you know. But when I was there, I suppose NOMA did influence me in a way. But I was always interested in the sort of food that NOMA were doing anyway. You know, my brother's a horticulturalist. My father we lived beside a forest. My father always pushed us with an interest in nature and hunting and this, that, and the other. You know, so there was always an interest there. And just when I became a chef and got into the whole system of actually making food, my interest in wild food then came back. You know, that if I could meld the two of them together, nature and cook together in a kind of a sustainable and lovely way. You know,
Do you have a name for this restaurant yet, or is that too far in the future?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a name. We've been kind of battling with names for ages, but I don't really want to say what it is yet, so.
About dessert, what kind of, like, newfound ingredients are you looking at and excited about using that sort of either got lost on the way or just being discovered?
One of the challenges I faced when working in the near, I started there in the autumn, and it was great because you have the berries and fruits and all of these things, but then you go into winter, you have nothing. So it's creating desserts without using things. Like when I was in London, I mean, you have everything and anything. You can use whatever you want. You can get anything from anywhere in the world. Mangoes, you know, everything, pineapples, all of these things. And then it's just sort of going back and exploring the things that are available, and then just trying to get, at first it was a challenge. Now it's like now I can't use a pineapple. I don't know. I don't know how to immediately go towards these, approach these things anymore. And then like you start to find things like.
You said that you didn't have a mic. You said it's all a learning curve, and there's a lot of that in contemporary food, I know. Yeah, but I love your talking about the pineapples and so on. We interviewed a chef who I won't name that did the whole locavore thing, and then I realized on his menu that almost every single thing had coconut in it, and I wondered... So I keep looking all around as we're driving your countryside, wondering where the coconuts grow in Ireland.
I suppose we reduce the amount of things that were possible for us to use. So we don't use any pepper. We don't use any citrus fruit. Yeah, no spices unless it's like... That's why I'm quite excited about finding seeds. You know, I found wild carrots growing along the seashore there. And I smell the seeds. The seeds smell like... I suppose they're a mixture between caraway and coriander seeds. Kind of really orangey sort of smell off them. I find interesting ways of using that, you know, and using, instead of citrus, we use like spruce tips and things like that, you know.
Do you check with your father about whether or not these are poisonous materials?
No. Well, my dad wouldn't really be aware of the culinary aspects of it, but he'd be able to name exactly what I was looking at though. So that all comes with reading, doing other research. Like, I mean, obviously there's a few, we make a few mistakes along the way, or you know, you see a bumper crop or something. Like this year there's a lot of berries out, you know. So there was a huge crop of rowan berry or mountain ash, and because they're quite tart and bitter, we wanted to see some way we could use them, so I fermented them. We salted them and let them ferment naturally for about 3 weeks, and they were still quite tart, you know, so we put vinegar in them, but the result was incredible. We used them up on Knocksoon last week as well, but it's little, we mess around with things till we get, not till we get the desired result, but just see what the end result is, you know, and whether we can use it or not, and that's up to, we need to make a decision then, is it usable or is it not usable, you know, but as we say, it's all a learning curve, and it will always be a learning curve, like, you know, because we're always trying to find new things. We do find new things, like, so.
Well, it sounds like an adventure for you, and it sounds like an adventure for your guests. I hope you'll keep us posted as to when you open, and I hope it's soon. And thank you for taking, both of you, for taking the time to talk to us.
Did we mention during the interview that Enda did a stage at NOMA in Copenhagen?
I think so.
I think we did, but if not, let's underline that, because that was certainly a startling moment in his career. And Conor Cockram came from working at the Ledbury, which is most people's bet for the best restaurant in London. So you can tell they're a dynamic pair.
Over and over again, I might say, when we were talking to Enda's peers, they pointed out that Enda is like amazingly, extraordinarily talented, and I can hardly wait for him to open his new place. At any rate, let's now go for a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And if you haven't been surprised already, you'll certainly be surprised with the last interview in today's program from Galway, because it's with a veteran Japanese chef who has a sushi restaurant
called Raw Sushi in the Sky. And who would ever believe that we would be there in Galway eating this wonderful sushi?
So it's a very, very interesting story, and a very, very interesting place.
It seems I've eaten sushi most places in the world and some unlikely places, but I never ever expected to encounter a first-rate sushi restaurant in Galway, Ireland. Oh, we just had the most wonderful spread. We're going to be talking to Chef Hisashi Kumagai. Okay, that's how I would ordinarily did them. And also, who is the chef? And we're going to talk about his background. And we're also going to talk to the restaurant manager, Taryn Lynch. I got that one right, Taryn, I gather. All right, let's start first of all. We're going to be able to call Chef Kuma. You are a very experienced sushi chef, and you have worked all over the world give us a little bit of your background.
Okay, actually is my professional way is a French training chef. I didn't train the sushi chef from the beginning, but you know, in Japan is when you start in this business, always Japanese cooking and Western cooking and sushi and Chinese. So always a little bit you explain the experiment. And what I actually is first I really look into the sushi was I was actually in Canada and I was in a, one of the private club head chef in that time. And the what we did was the Moet in Shandong in California approached us to celebrate their three different champagne with a sushi. So that was first my really great experience. And we had, I had actually is very good sushi chef friends in Vancouver. Name is Miko Sushi. And he came to make sushi. Then I said, wow, that's great. And between champagne and sushi is how great match rather than in wines or in sake. I was amazed. So then I start using sushi into my menu. Then I went to the, of course, Miko Sushi, learn some bits. So since then, I moved a few places. Now I came to, in Ireland with my wife, and I work in a few places. And I start by a small bit of the sushi into the, my menu, and that's how it came. And the last place before I came to the Radisson to open the this sushi restaurants, I was working in Doonbeg, and I had sushi week, which is once a Wednesday, once a week, every Wednesday. And of course, there are a lot of Americans and golfers there, and they love it. So that's why actually gets more into the sushi. Then the came in this the opportunity in last year, so I joined them.
Now, we started off by talking about you and the manager, Taryn. We haven't mentioned that the name of the restaurant is Raw Sushi in the Sky, and it is in the Radisson Hotel. And, Taryn, can you explain to us, how did this happen to be?
Well, back in 2011, we had a change in management here, and our GM loves sushi. But he couldn't find sushi here in Galway. So we were looking for a new concept for a restaurant here in the hotel. So he thought it would be perfect to have a sushi restaurant. So I think from his first idea to opening it, it took roughly around 5 to 6 months. And we opened here in April 2012. So it's been going great so far.
There's not really a large tradition of sushi in Western Ireland. How was this received, and did you have to make adaptations, chef, to accommodate the clientele? Were people ready to eat the kind of sushi you were giving them?
Well, actually, is the surprising when we start open was actually is quite a few people who came in, and mainly surprising again is young ladies. So like 70% or 75% was ladies. And they already enjoy that. Then we start talking, actually, you know, these people are traveling in the States and Canada and so on and so on. They experience for their sushi. It's not really first time. Also, we have, you know, few people that never eat sushi. It's people there. But majority is they had already had sushi somewhere. So I don't think really new or, you know, something strange to be open restaurant in sushi restaurant in a restaurant. I don't think so. But still, Ireland is very small majority-wise with the sushi restaurants because this is really good, healthy food and easy to eat. Only thing is that they love raw fish or not. But, of course, you know, it's not only raw fish only. We have something else, vegetarians, and the cooked items as well.
I guess this part of the world shines in fresh seafood. I mean, didn't you find that an extra blessing to have so much availability of seafood?
Yes. Ireland is actually, you know, surrounding its ocean like Japan's. But the fish-wise, kind of a little bit limited to use, not in like Japan. But still really good seafood around here. Like I say, scallop you ate from the wakes were really good ones. And of course, I can't use oyster, but the oysters are famous over here. And the other things is, the oyster doesn't actually suit for the sushi with rice together. So it's different ways. It's alacrus, you know, like I say, different clams or abalone. That kind of thing is very good. But not oysters, unfortunately, is not. But anyway, I make something different.
You mean even fried oysters doesn't go with sushi rice?
Well, it's just a little bit different when you even fry the oysters. So it's not fried prawns or fried crab or anything. It's a little bit different textures. So I don't know. I don't think, to me, my knowledge is a bit different.
I never thought of it, but I've never had oyster sushi. Anyhow, you do a lot more at this restaurant, Taryn, than just serving sushi to dining customers. Could you explain some of your other programs?
Absolutely. So from we opened, we had a lot of demand for people to have some takeaway. So perhaps on the way home, they wanted to pick up something quick and take home with them. Also, we run a masterclass once a month where Kuma demonstrates and shows people how to make sushi from the beginning so they can do it at home as well. And this is great because the better the knowledge people have, the more adventurous they become.
Yes, I mean, I don't know how many people really take these sushi classes and go home and make it themselves. I know I have tracked that, but I have the feeling that not many do. But now, has this become a place that locals favor? You're in a hotel, so you have all the visitors that, as you mentioned, Chef, has become yet a destination restaurant.
Well, that's what you're looking for. But I think it's getting more popular and also a little bit demanding for the eating sushi in the west of Ireland. And just I came up in my mind, the last night was couple was there, the young couple. And I was doing, and I think he just finished up and they go home. And they came to me and say, "Oh, thank you very much for the nice experience, and especially in the west of Ireland." So I said, "Yes, now we are here." They say, "Okay, we come again." So, you know, I think it's still, you know, is, what to say, a more challenge, whatever it is. But it's come gradually, is more popular in this place anyway.
Now, Taryn, you have an exceptionally large selection of beverages as well. Can you address that?
Absolutely. So we wanted to keep it very traditional. So we have a range of sakis. We have some green tea juices, a variety of antioxidant juices. We also have a selection of Japanese teas. Obviously, we have champagne and sushi, which goes very well together. We have Jack Arts champagne here in the restaurant. We also have a hand-picked a variety of wines that goes perfectly with the sushi. To keep everyone happy, we have a little bit of Irish whiskies, but Japanese whiskies as well, and obviously some soft drinks. So
now we're down to what did we eat? Chef, could you describe the little tasting bits you put together for us, which we just about cleaned up on you? You probably didn't expect that we two of us could eat that much, but we loved it. Could you explain what you had?
Yes, one of it was the nigiri, you know, which is hand-made nigiri. This was consists with the tuna, swordfish, sea bass, and the buns, which is cooked, and the eel. It's kabayaki eel, which is traditional Japanese eel. Salmon, of course, And the salmon is actually is the best seller in here because a lot of people choose salmon. I don't know because they're Irish. But I mean, salmon is really, really popular here. Then the other one is the salt shell crab, which is dipped. Then it always the sauce called nikiri, which is mirin and soy sauce and the fish stock reduced together and inside. And the red tobiko, which is a flying fish roe, and avocados. And I use a lot of avocados in these days. I think people love avocado in the sushi, especially California roll is one of the best ones. And California roll is the crab meat and the avocado. I don't use the cucumber that was originally. I use the more mustard crust inside, a little bit different, but it is very good.
Well, we certainly enjoy that. And I was wondering, how can we talk you into getting some of your soups on the breakfast menu downstairs? They have this huge buffet, but we can't get the soups. Anyhow, I hope that people will take advantage. It's a beautifully appointed room overlooking water. It's what? Lac Italia is here, yeah. It's right out the window, and it's a charming, relaxing space with bamboo and the kind of classic sushi that you're looking for. Again, thank you both so much, and continued success.
So, listeners, in case you're surprised at how we're going to end this program, we're going to say Galway Island ought to be on your map. If you haven't been there before, you certainly ought to get there. No excuses, only about 3 hours' drive from Dublin, and less time than that if you can manage to fly to Shannon. And there's even a small airport in Galway itself. Hightail it there, and we'll be back next week with more from this wonderful green land. And until then,
bye-bye.